accession number 27237, Dr. Robert Nowarski, Reel 8. Now, we're talking about your time with 302 Squadron at Northolt. Now, were there any particular incidents you remember or from that time you were there? Because you were there quite, you did 55 operational sorties with them, I mean, according to your notes. Do you remember any in particular incidents that you can tell us about, or was it all much of a muchness?
Not really, actually. As you say, it was more or less all much of a muchness, depending on what sort of sort you were on. You knew what to expect. It wasn't a...
Did you have any particular close escapes or time to...
Not at that time, no.
Did it affect your nerves at all?
I don't know.
Because people talk about combat.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Yes. No.
How were your nerves? I mean, did you worry about it at night?
No. It didn't really. Well, it worried me. Of course, it worried me because you were 9 or 10. You were missing pilots. Your friends. You see that. You knew that they were either shot down, or you knew that they were probably dead. You see, because of what happened. You see, now. But you didn't sort of think that it's going to happen to you. You only thought it was just bad luck. And it's from that point, I must say, I'm not trying to be sort of brave or anything. I didn't really think about things like that. It didn't really affect me, no.
What about when he did have casualties? I mean, was there a...
Well, exactly, if you had casualties, you were very sorry that Papa is gone, you see, then, and you hoped that he would survive somehow and be a POW, you see, there. But... sometimes you knew that nothing like that was happening. You see, there's no.
Was there an effort to forget them? They used to have a no empty chairs at breakfast.
Yeah, dinner. That's what you mean. Not really. No. There's no. You didn't. You didn't have an allocated sort of place. I mean, this is for me here, and that's for.
Did they have replacements there straight away?
You would get the replacement within a few days. Yes, you would get you could get replacements within a few days. Yes.
Now,
but
so was there a set length of an operational tour?
No, you were not. No, you're not really. No, but I know that in the first one, I've done about 55 flights or something. You see. That was in. Yes.
And when was that by? When did you finish? You got there in November.
I must have finished April, May, June.
Round about then.
42.
So.
About May, I would have thought rather. April, May, yes. I think so. I'm not quite sure. You see, I have with my logbook. I have not got my
logbook. You lost your logbook, right?
I have lost my logbook, you know. And so that was the... That's the... That I'm a bit vague when it comes to the actual dates, you see.
But roundabout. Roundabout.
Yeah, it's roundabout May, I would have thought. April, May. I was then sent to... to in the Grangemouth, I think it was.
58. Well, it says 58 operational training.
58 OTU.
What's that?
Yes.
Because Grangemouth, you thought
that was Grangemouth.
So you went back to Grangemouth?
Yeah, that's right. Yes, I did go back to. Yes, that's right. Because I went to another OTU later on, when after the second lot, but that was at Harden in Cheshire.
Now, when we first talked about the yes. OTU at Grangemouth, you thought it was 61 rather. You think it's 58 then? Well, or had it changed?
No, I don't know. Look, one was 68, one was 58. One was 61, one was 58. Now, I think that Grangemouth, it could have been 58, actually.
You think 58?
Yes. I was in two, you see. Now. I was in Grangemouth at that time, which I think is 58. But later on, I was... In another OTU, but that was in Harden.
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 Oh, in Cheshire, yeah.
Cheshire, yes.
That was 61.
That was 61.
According to your notes, so I think we'll go with 58 was the Grangemouth and 61, and they can always correct that later.
Yes.
Now, how did you feel when you got that posting? Was it a relief?
No. Well, I knew that I was one of the more experienced chaps, you see, in the squadron, and I knew that they would be replacing me, or they would be, and the usual place where they would send you would have been out here, you see, operational training unit, and then you were then instructing there, you see.
Now,
you had,
what was it like? But you'd been there as a trainee, and now you're there as an instructor.
Yes.
What was it like being an instructor to young pilots?
You like the young fellows used to call you Sir, you see.
You were still just a sergeant then?
No, I was flight sergeant then.
Flight sergeant?
Well, that was automatic anyway, yes.
So, what happened? Tell me about training, what was it like?
Well, then you did it. You took them up, you see. In, first of all, you took them up in two-seater aircraft, you see. They're usually musters.
Muster,
yes. They were took and your other instructor would take another master, and another instructor would take another master, and then you would be flying in formation, you see, with the other chaps. So the other chap would so that the people you see you would know how far to keep you and what to do and how you fly in formation, you see. And then once they've done that, they would then go to fly. Well, at that time, I think we had Spitfires.
Master
O'Brien, you see. Master, yes, yes.
And what were the, what, how did the pupils do?
It was a two-seater. It was a very good aircraft, just two-seater. It was with a tandem seating, so that you had your pupil in front of you. And you sat in the back.
And how?
They could fly masters already, you see.
Oh, they'd already learned to fly. This is just operational training.
Yes.
How good were they?
Oh, they were all right. They knew how to fly in masters. You see, there's no. You were teaching them to how to fly information, where you place your how you place yourself in the formation. You see there, and what, how to anticipate things. You would also the formation takeoffs. Not landings, but just formation takeoffs, you see there. You would also do with them. That was on the two-seater ones. And then, of course, they would graduate to a Spitfire, and they would have few familiarization flights in their Spitfires. And then you would again take them up, but then you would be flying a Spitfire, and he would be flying a Spitfire. You would be quite independent then, you see. Then you would teach them again sort of formation flying and formation takeoffs.
And how good were they? I mean, were there many accidents, or were they safe enough? At that time,
actually, when we were there, we had no accidents at all during the 4 or 5 months that I was there. In fact, at the time, we didn't have any accidents. No, we didn't have any accidents, no. We had, one funny occurrence, actually, because there was a, we went from the in a couple of masters actually. There was flying one master, and my colleague, also an instructor, was flying another master, and we were flying to Kinross to pick up a friend of ours to get him and take him back to our mess, you see, there for he was going to stay the night, and then we would fly them back again. We haven't seen him for a long time. And I was all right, but my friend that was flying them, the other master, his engine packed up. And eventually, we are flying at about 4,000 or 5,000 feet. His engine packed up, and then he caught fire. He was lucky by himself. Now he bailed out, and the aircraft was spiraling, like that sort of all sort of trailing a black smoke behind it. And unfortunately, it caught the canopy of his parachute. So there was the aircraft, parachute canopy there, and he was at the end of it, you see. Then eventually, as it was not all that far above the ground, it did detach itself, the thing. So the aircraft crashed, you see, and then his parachute was small, you could see there. So it wasn't properly inflated or properly sort of helping him to descend, you see. Luckily he finished up in a bloody great big gorse bush, which sort of got the, he didn't get his, took the full, most of the force of the landing, you see. And even if it didn't hit the gorse bush, he probably would have been all right anyway, but that actually cushioned it well, you see. There. So, that was that. And I then went, I went to Kid Ross and told them what happened. They sent a thing there to collect him, you see. There. Now, and I had to fly back again. I flew back to Frenchmouth. And okay, told him all about it and all that. Now, he arrived next day. He was flown in from there. He arrived next day back to the back, and all he was perfectly right, except that all his things were torn because of the gorse, you see there. His glass were in shreds, you see there, and all that. But otherwise, he was perfectly right, doesn't know.
So he was lucky.
Oh, absolutely, yes. Very lucky, actually, yes.
Anything else happened while you were at Grangemouth?
So that was the funny sort of thing. Well, not much funny, no. It ended up happily, you see. There, so it was what? Nothing very much else, no. Not at Grangemouth, no.
The next thing, there's a date on this. You were there. It was in September 1942. You were posted to 316 Squadron.
That's right, yes.
Now, where was that there. At?
Yeah. From there, I was posted to 316 Squadron, yes. And now, at that time, if I remember rightly, the squadron was at Hutton Cranswick in Yorkshire.
No. And where, sorry?
Hutton Cranswick. Hutton, Hawton, Cranswick. Which is west of York, I suppose. Not far from Beverley, that's right, yes. I was used to go on a bus to Beverley too. And that was. Yes, the squadron was on rest, actually. It was on a rest.
It was resting there?
It was resting there, yes. The squadron was resting there, yes. To begin with, there was nothing. We had few scrambles they thought that Germans were coming, and they scrambled us up. And we did quite a lot of, not all that many, but a number of patrols. Of a shipping, you see.
A shipping patrol?
Yeah, shipping patrol.
Anything ever happen?
No, nothing happened there. No, it was too far away, actually, from the German cells. No, nothing happened there. I think it was probably quite superfluous, though. But just in case, you see, they wanted to be covered.
Sounds like it was mainly to keep you busy, training.
Well, yes, but I suppose they assured us fate if they didn't do a patrol, you see, they would come and be bombed, you see. If they did, you see, as it happened, they didn't.
Now, you had a new aircraft in the sense that you were in Spitfire
5Bs. Yes, Spitfire 5Bs. Yes, that was the difference, actually, there, was that the wings were clipped. You see, normally it's an elliptical wind, a wing like that, you see. Now, within Spitfire 5B, the end of it was clipped. So
just cut straight.
Cut straight, yes. And that made the aircraft just slightly faster. And also, it made it much more maneuverable. That way, you see there. Quite a bit. Like you could see it different, actually.
It was noticeable then.
But it was noticeable, yes. But the speed, you wouldn't notice all that much, actually, because there were only a few knots, you see. So it's not,
So it's more the maneuverability.
But it's more the maneuverability, you see. But that was very. It was very nice aircraft, too. Very nice to fly.
Now, how long were you at Hatton Crans Rick?
We went there for very long. We were probably only for a month or two or so. And then we went to Northolt from there.
Now, was this still a Polish state?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Northolt was a Polish station right from, say, 41. Well, even before that, you see. But in 1940, there was 303, end of 40, there was 302 was there as well, and 41, the number of squadrons there, you see, always. But from about, I suppose, latter part of 41 until April 44, there were always three Polish fighter squadrons there all the time.
And they would rotate, you see. Was Polish, of course.
Oh, yeah. If 306 was Polish, yes. One squadron, yes.
Now, what were you doing there? I mean...
Then again, the whole story there again. There's no... we were just... all the operational flights from as you heard, there were escorts again.
Was it mainly escorts?
We also did other things as well, but escorts and fighter sweeps and.
Now it seems you were more concentrated on coastal targets and things places like Lille and Amiens just behind.
Is that the case?
That was when they were
bombing it. The bombers were bombing it, you see, there, and we would escort them. But mainly the furthest that we had to go for escorts was Brest. That was the other side of Normandy. But for that, you see, we would fly to Portreath first. Perrenporth, and refuel there, and then escort bombers again to that they would be bombing Brest, you see, there, and then come back again to Portreath and refuel and go back to north. You from Northolt to Brest would have been too far, but from Portreath, from Cornwall, you see, there, it was much shorter journey. But even then, it was virtually at the limit of your range, you see, there, anyway.
Now, you seem to have met much more opposition in this.
Especially when we went to, say, Caen or Brest. Brest was always very heavily defended. Not only by Akak, but by fighters. We always met five fighters there. We had few casualties actually, from the Brest missions, you see.
Do you remember anything in any particular event or particular raids? that you were
Well, one particular rate was when a very good friend of mine actually was shot down. I never heard of again. Nobody saw him actually. That he was shot down because he said, "You see that he's bailing out." But I was there, but nobody saw it actually, and we never heard again whether he was a prisoner or whether he was not. You see, that was a particular friend of mine actually. There was no, and that sort of.
And you never found out after the war.
Yeah, we never found out actually. We never found out what happened to him. No, no, no.
But he was killed.
Oh, he would have been killed. Yes. It is just possible that he might have landed in the sea. You see, with his parachute, never seen again.
Now, what scale of casualties were you getting? I mean,
well, I suppose every second flight that we went to defend Brest, you see, we would probably lose a pilot.
How many would go?
To 12. 12, yes. I don't think we've ever lost more than one in a flight. But we know that during that time, because we only made about 6 or 7 sorties of a Brest from Portreat, you see. But we certainly lost 5 or 6 pilots, which was unusual for a.
Now that's a lot out of that squadron. That is
a lot. I said that is a lot. Yes, and another.
Were they mainly due to ground fire or
fighters? No. That was fighters. That was fighters. It wasn't there. You see, they were quite cocky there. You see, there because I mean the German fighters. I mean because they were well in. Hello. Did you miss one? Yes, at the time we met the first batch of Focke-Wulfs 190, which we didn't quite know what they were. They're quite different from Messerschmitts and to look at, and they're also faster, and they had the edge on Spitfires.
In what way?
Every
way, or?
Well, they were faster, really. First of all, so it was difficult to catch them. But on the other hand, the Spitfires were more maneuverable. So you, in actual combat, you could keep your own. You see now that is. Until we were equipped with Spitfire 9s. And the main difference between the 5 and the 9 was that it had a supercharger would come in at about 23,000 feet. And by that time, normally the power of the engine would be dropping off at that height. Now with the supercharger, it got new life also, as it were, put in it. And so, in fact, then it was just about little better the performance than the Focke-Wulf.
Now, wouldn't that be later in 1944? You got the Spitfire 9s.
Yes. Oh, that would be later. Yes.
So you were making do with Spitfire 5.
Oh yes.
Now
yes,
the Spitfire 5 then, the Focke-Wulf was more powerful.
It was more powerful, and you see, the main difference really at that time was that it was more powerful, and so between 20,000 and 25,000 feet, the Focke-Wulf. Now. By that time, you see, the performance of the Spitfire would be diminishing the higher up you went, you see. But it was more maneuverable. than the Focke-Wulf, you see, there, really. So from that point of view, you felt that you, if you knew what you were doing and you knew where the chap was, you could get away with it. But it was a very good record.
How important was his experience in the air? Because were most of the casualties from new pilot? There's this thing of what if you manage to survive a certain amount,
yep,
you can get through quite a lot longer until your luck runs out, in
yes,
a way.
But it doesn't
guarantee you immortality.
No, it's not guaranteed. No, what you knew was that you knew how to evaluate sort of things. You knew what you at least you thought you knew what the chap can do and what he can't do. You see, which helps. You see, and also you were more concentrating, I think, than of really knowing where he was. You see, or if there was an emergency, to know exactly where the thing was. It was better not to follow somebody. If you did that, you have to make sure that you're not being followed by yourself by somebody, you see, there, because that could have been the end of you, you see, there. And so really, the more experience you had, actually, the wiser you were, you see, at this thing, you see, you.
So younger, well, not younger, but more inexperienced pilots would make mistakes.
Yes. They would think, you see, I've got this chap in my sights, you see, let's concentrate on it. You see, by the time something happened, you see, he was a target himself, without knowing, you see, that.